Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
All is well. I've made my peace where highways never end. Yesterday's a memory. Today is just a friend. For the mountains and Marianne are calling me again, and the red pines will bow their heads. The rivers and the watersheds will swallow up my tears. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates the work of Gordon Lightfoot song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and along with me today is a fellow fan making his fourth appearance on the show from Markham, Ontario, Michael Howitt. Michael, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on here. Now, you've been, as I said, on the show a few times before, so we won't go through your entire background with Lightfoot, but no. I understand that you have some good, fast-breaking news for us.
Yeah, so we just became grandparents for the fourth time. The latest one was a boy born 2 weeks ago. So some more bodies to groom into the Lightfoot family. So I'm working on teaching them some Lightfoot songs at some point.
All right. And that is a noble endeavor. So congratulations, Grandpa. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So you wanted to talk about the mountains and Marianne today. And I totally understand why you wanted to. Listening back to it in the past few days, I can't help but think this is Gordon at his happiest. This is a joyous song. And we know that Gordon had a lot of depressing and unhappy times in his life later on, and probably before too. It also feels like it would be great music for the closing credits of a movie, as if the narrator has come out the other end of a series of events or a crisis of some kind, and now he's going home or going back to the life that he knows. And that's what resonates with me. So why did you want to talk about it tonight?
When we did Black Day in July a while back, I said the same thing, but the first time I heard Gordon Lightfoot was my father's 8-track he had of the Did She Mention My Name album. So I would have been about 9 years old at the time. It was an 8-track, so I could only listen to it in the car. So I used to spend hours listening to this album in the car. So it brings back so many great memories. And I just find this particular song as well, it became one of my favorites, because back then, up here in just north of Toronto anyways, the only songs you heard on the radio or wherever were just generic songs. You never heard Canadian-type song. And so this song, there's lyrics in it referring to Saskatchewan and the prairies. And being that age, it just sounded like an adventurous song, a travel song. So there's a sense of adventure. It was kind of joyous. So I think that's why I was so attracted to it. You know, I hadn't heard Gordon's earlier stuff like Canadian Railroad Trilogy, you know, other Canadiana type songs. But, you know, this one really resonated with me. And I think that's one of the things that initially attracted me to Gordon. Like, here's a Canadian singing about Canada and he lives in Toronto, you find out later. So I think that's why I really became a Lightfoot fan. And this was the song that kind of resonated with me from that album.
He obviously is a very proud resident and native and citizen of Canada. But he's not talking about it. He's never really talked about it in a militaristic way, which is the stereotypical patriotism, nationalism. And he's doing it in such a wonderfully evocative way that it made me feel like I was in that car with him going across the provinces from Ontario to Alberta.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've never spent any time in Canada at all, but this was a song that made me think I've got to get there. I've got to experience some of this landscape that he is describing. And so, you know, it's definitely on my bucket list to start in Ontario and do the Lightfoot Trail and Orillia, and then do other parts of the country also. And I'm going to have you as my tour guide. So get ready.
Sure. Yeah, we've been to Orillia, a few times, where it's about an hour and a half away from where I live. Great thing about Orillia, there's so many tributes to Lightfoot there. As you mentioned, Lightfoot Trail with statues, such a testimonial to Lightfoot there. That, and I'm sure that means more to him than there's talk about, should he have been awarded a Grammy for his body of work or whatever. But I'm sure this stuff and being in the Songwriters Hall of Fame means more to him than that stuff. So yeah, Orillia is a great place, especially if you're a Lightfoot fan.
Oh, yeah. He and Stephen Leacock put the place on the map, really.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's able to keep that place close to his heart and that they remember him so fondly, I think says volumes about the man. So what is the best setting or activity for you to listen to this song? Or is this one of the songs that you could listen to irrespective of where you were or what you were doing?
I know it sounds hokey. There's not too many songs where I say you've got to be in the car driving to listen to it, but this is one of those songs for me. So I've never been out west. The furthest west I've been is Thunder Bay, which is kind of the northwest tip of Lake Superior. So I've never seen the mountains. The closest thing we get to mountains in Ontario is basically the north shore of Lake Superior. The closest I've come to mountains was traveling through upstate New York and New Hampshire and Vermont. So I can't drive to the mountains to see Marianne, but I can drive in the red pines and the watersheds, you know, here in northern Ontario and listen to songs. So that would be the ideal setting for me.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the particular natural phenomena that he mentions in the song. I'm like you. For me, it would be driving and it would be looking at the mountains or driving through the mountains. Or even better, it would be me as a passenger in a car that was driving through the mountains. Because if you go up into the Sierra Nevada, where I live in California, it's tricky. And particularly this time of year, it's downright dangerous. For me to be distracted, especially by an artist who means as much to me as Lightfoot, I'm kind of taking my life in my hands.
Exactly.
But if I were on a bus or if somebody else were driving, then I think I'd be happy as a lark.
Yeah, exactly.
So the song came about, from everything I can tell, Jennings mentioned that it was a Calgary school teacher whom he'd met while touring Alberta in 1967. And this person's name, I guess, has faded into obscurity, or at least Jennings did not mention this woman's name. Lightfoot himself said something about it, and I'm quoting directly from the songbook liner notes. He said, "A trip out west with a lady in waiting, not quite as adventurous as Easy Rider, but still a bit of a journey, filled with hope and expectation, and a better ending, a happier ending," unquote.
Right.
Now, you can't get a much sadder ending than Easy Rider had.
Yes.
So in a way, Lightfoot's not saying much, but I like the comparison to the road trip that you have in all kinds of literature.
Yeah, for sure. And there was on CBC, which is a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, there was a 1-hour special that CBC aired about Lightfoot in 1968. And you can see it on YouTube now, but he plays some songs in front of a studio audience. And one of the songs he plays is Mountains of Marianne. So it's just him, Red Shea, and John Stockfish. And he does give a bit of an introduction to the song. And he says, "This is a song about a young fella going across country on a motorcycle. At least that's the picture I had in mind for this song. He's gone out to see a girl that lives way across the country." So he kind of gives that color in this special he did. So I always, now I see him on the motorcycle going across the country for sure.
That brings up other visions though, doesn't it? I mean, I think about Che Guevara going out on his bike when he's 13 and the Motorcycle Diaries, the film of that. Being a young man and having your own autonomy, being able to go where you want,
right,
which explains the reference to the bedroll that Gordon makes a little later on. And then this is a little bit of a chilling irony. You got to think of Dylan and the motorcycle accident that he had in 66. or that he apparently had. There's a school of thought that said it was just an excuse for him to get away from the pressures of what was going on in his life. But in any case, the idea of the motorcycle is yet another series of visuals that we get when we're thinking of that. Now, Michael, you noticed some variations with the name in the song, and I know that you had wanted to talk about that.
Okay. It's a bit confusing to me, and I'm a bit of one of these grammar police people. Like, by no means am I an English major or anything, but I can be a bit of a grammar policeman. So, yeah, so there's so many different spellings and variations on the title of this song, which has always confused me. So I've got the original Did She Mention My Name album. So on the cover itself, it says The Mountain and Marianne is M-A-R-Y-A-N-N. But on the record inside, it says Mountains and Marianne is M-A-R-I-O-N. So that's confusing. I've got the original sheet music for the Did She Mention My Name album, and that's just Mountains and Marianne, I-A-N. I've got one of the United Artists re-releases, and it says Mountains and Marianne, I-A-N, for Marianne on cover. And on the record, Mountains and Marianne, I-O-N. And the songbook set, which released in 1999, it says The Mountains and Marianne, and that's M-A-R-Y-A-N-N. And that's the same that Jennings uses as his book. So I guess we go with The Mountains and Marianne, M-A-R-Y-A-N-N. So that's what I'm sticking to. But I just find it, and I know on the Facebook groups, there is some discussions over what's the correct title, but anyways.
Yeah, and Marianne. I actually tend to favor that because Marianne and Marianne are very distinctive names. But then again, if we wanted to go into the whole idea of Marianne, M-A-R-I-O-N, okay, well, that is the heroine in all the Robin Hood stories. So
that's right. Maybe
yet another aspect of this. We know that Lightfoot was a very well-read man. And so this may have been something that was going through his head. I tend to think that he was thinking about, if he wasn't giving this woman a pseudonym, that Marianne, M-A-R-Y-A-N-N, was actually her real name. We'll never know the true story, but it's fun to think about.
I just think it's an odd thing about this song. But anyways, that's just my little grammar police issue. No,
cool little tidbit. Well, I was spelling police. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the lyrics a little bit here. All is well. I've made my peace where highways never end. Yesterday's a memory. Today is just a friend. And it is classic folk song kind of lyrics here.
Yeah.
But I think about this is a guy who has a clear conscience about what's happened to him, what's in his rearview mirror. He's made his peace with it. We don't know what it is, but he is looking back on it. He doesn't have any regrets about it. What does he mean by highways never end? I mean, this gives this idea that he's going to be perpetually on the road, but yet the rest of the song gives the impression that he's going from somewhere to somewhere, that he's going home to some extent. So what do you think he means by that?
Yeah, for me, it's been, he met this girl in the past, and in his life now, highways never end. He's on a road that's going nowhere. It's just going in circles. He's not going anywhere. So he's made up his mind. Anyway, when he talks about yesterday's a memory, so maybe that's, for me, that's referring back to Marianne. Like, that's a memory. Highways never end. I'm kind of going nowhere right now, so I've got to get on with a new life. And he's made peace with that decision. And he can mention in the next line that Mountains and Marianne are calling me again. So he's going back to her and to that memory, and he's going to make a new life from that. And when he says today is just a friend, could be the present time is okay, but he really wants to go back and revisit that girl from his past and start a new life. That's kind of what it says to me.
So the idea of today is a transient thing, okay, that he's maybe in the back of his mind or maybe the front of his heart, he's thinking that this girl is going to be with him forever because he's clearly in love. But today is just a phase, that tomorrow is going to be a new day, that this particular 24-hour period is not going to be there forever, as contrasted to this woman that he hopes will be there forever.
Yeah.
For the mountains and Marianne are calling me again, and the red pines will bow their heads. The rivers and the watersheds will swallow up my tears. Now, that brings up the idea about which mountains he's talking about. Now, me being an American, the two mountain ranges that I thought of immediately, and a Californian in particular, clearly he's not talking about the Sierra Nevadas, but the only other range that I know of that goes out of the States and into Canada is the Rockies. The Great. Problem with that is that apparently there's not a whole lot of exposure to the Rockies, certainly in Ontario. And my understanding is that the Rockies go more into Alberta and British Columbia. Right. So, but it also, there are a lot of mountain ranges in Alberta. The last I counted, I looked at an atlas online. There's something like 40 mountain ranges. Now, I know you've never been out there, but you have any idea about which mountain range? Not that it really matters, but I'm just curious if there's a particular mountain range you think you might have been talking about.
For me in Ontario, we, I don't know, maybe we're a bit naive, but we just kind of think of the Rockies, like it's just the Rockies in Alberta and British Columbia. I know there's other mountains, I guess, in British Columbia, but I always kind of thought maybe Marianne lives in like a city like Calgary, where Calgary is close enough to the Rockies that you can see them in the distance. And it's about maybe just over half an hour drive to get from Calgary to the mountains. So maybe she lives in the Calgary area type thing. And it's almost like he wrote Alberta Bound later, but it kind of reminds me of this same song where he says he's leaving the brown and gritty streets of Toronto and get back to the Rocky Mountain sunset. And the one I left behind me. So those are lyrics from Alberta Bound. So it's very much like, you know, evolves from this song. It's kind of the same type of thing, leaving Toronto and going to the one I love type things. So.
And that is a long drive. I mean, I haven't measured it, but when I think about it, the parallel would be kind of like driving from New York City to Denver in the States. So that is a 2-day drive if you're flooring it. And if you're driving, you know, 18 hours a day. So that is a long trek that he's talking about. If he were driving from Toronto to, let's say, Calgary or Edmonton, we don't really know where this person lives. The other part of the geography that I thought was interesting is that there are no red pines in Alberta. They are indigenous to Ontario or the northeastern United States. You get them in Pennsylvania and New York and other parts of New England. So that kind of implies that he's finishing up a tour in the States, or he's starting from Ontario, you know, where he grew up, and then just heading due west.
Yeah, I did a bit of research. So it looks like there are red pines in the northern Midwest. So, and this is just my thoughts, but he probably went through Detroit and then up through Wisconsin, Minnesota. I have driven the road that goes into the prairies north of the Great Lakes. It goes along the east shore of Lake Huron, north shore of Lake Huron, then up above Lake Superior. And the roads are okay today, but back in the 60s when he wrote this, a lot of those roads are probably very sketchy. The weather can be very bad. The terrain is pretty rough. So I'm thinking if he went out west, he probably wouldn't go along the lake shore, the north shore of the Great Lakes. He'd probably loop through the States and go that way. Yeah, and it looks like there are red pines in that area, like, I guess, Wisconsin, Minnesota, I think.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I just know that there aren't any in Alberta, so it would imply
definitely not.
That he's taking a different route, like the route that you're suggesting there. We'll be right back to our conversation with Michael Howitt about the mountains in Marianne. But first, a word from a podcast partner or two.
Hey, do you like classic albums? Technically, like, the, you know, the 20th century albums, such as, like, Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones. I've only had Beatle episodes so far. However, I'll be doing more. But welcome to my show, or rather, hey, welcome to check out my show. All those years ago, a classic album podcast with The Dipping Sauce, as you can see the George Harrison reference, I review classic albums, not of those the likes of Beethoven, the likes of the Beatles and Rolling Stones, and like I mentioned earlier, or what have you. So yeah, check it out. It's every Monday. I do albums, conspiracies, songs, all that jazz, so just check it out. All those years ago, a classic album podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Books Boys! Every month, Dean and PJ tell you all about the books they've been reading and make some recommendations from our old favorites, plus surprise call-ins from authors to talk about the works that they're writing, original music, prize giveaways, and more. That's Books Boys on BooksBoys.com
and all good podcatchers.
Books Boys, get it, buy it!
The rivers and the watersheds will swallow up my tears. And I thought to myself, wait a second, Gordon, you just said all is well. And now you're talking about tears just a few words later. And I'm wondering if that was just poetic license, because if all is well, why would you be crying tears?
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite lines of the song, where he says the red pines will bow their heads, the rivers and the watersheds will swallow up my tears. And the imagery takes you on the journey along with Gordon through some rough terrain and things like that. And he says all is well. I don't know how many times he said it throughout the song, but there's numerous times. And it's almost like he's traveling along and he's maybe having second guessing, doubting himself. And then he kind of thinks, wait a minute, all is well. Like, this is okay. So it's almost like he's trying to reassure himself and going to have second thoughts. So it's almost like a metaphor where if I miss home, I'm sad, whatever. That's okay. The red pines are bowing their heads to welcome me along the way. And if I do feel sad, then almost like a metaphor, the watersheds will swallow my tears, that, you know, nature is egging him on to his goal and all is well. So.
Yeah, it's an expression that I may feel sad or I may have some emotions, but nature is going to absorb that. And yeah, this experience I'm going to have with this woman whom he's clearly in love with, he doesn't need to worry about it. I left the cold Midwestern towns behind. Now, this also comes to possibly another cultural difference. In the States, we think of the Midwest as kind of the flyover states. So I'm talking about places where mostly rural, not a lot of big cities, and not a lot of airports. And so we call them the flyover states. And I'm talking about Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, the Dakotas, places where there's very small populations. There's a joke down here that North Dakota only has 14 and a half people and half of them want to move. But I guess what I'm wondering is, does the reference Midwest, does that mean anything to a Canadian? I mean, are the middle provinces referred to as the Midwest?
Nothing I heard of. Like, we refer to that area, like the middle of Canada, as the prairies. Like, it's basically prairies, Saskatchewan, some of Manitoba, some of Alberta. Yeah, the Midwest isn't a Canadian term that I've heard. We all think about the Midwestern states. When he says the cold Midwestern towns behind, I'm thinking like Minnesota's part of the northern Midwest, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, as you said. So I'm thinking about that area. So it kind of makes sense if he goes on that route through Detroit and then up around. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where he's driving his motorcycle through.
Yeah, although cold Midwestern towns, the winter in the Midwest, I don't want to be on a motorcycle at all. I think being in a car would be dangerous enough and cold enough, but being on a motorcycle exposed to the elements, no thank you. But maybe the fact that he's willing to do this, it indicates youth. And it indicates foolishness that goes along with being in love. And Dylan said it best. He said, you can't be wise and in love at the same time. So if you're going to drive through the Dakotas on a motorcycle in January, you're taking your life in your hands. But, you know, what's the point of being young if you can't be impulsive once in a while? There's a semi up the road ahead. I'll take him in my time. Now, semis don't generally travel very fast. And in the 60s, they probably didn't travel fast at all because the engines have gotten more strong over the years, I imagine. I don't know anything about cars. But does this imply that he's not necessarily in a breakneck rush to get where he's going? Or is this just poetic license to fill out the rest of the verse?
That's how I was thinking. It's like, you know, I'm going to get there, but he has a quiet confidence about him. Like, I'm not going to go crazy, but he's got a quiet confidence. I'm going to get there. nothing's going to stand in my way. There's a semi, so it's not going to stop me. I'll get around him. And probably as a good Canadian, as he drove by, he probably said, sorry, but.
Okay. It does add another element to the journey. And I love that he put it in. But in my usual academic sense, I'm thinking about this probably way too much. For the hot-blooded mountain love is calling me again. And I'm just thinking, this is such a lustful, masculine term. I probably could not go on the Facebook group, maybe you have, you know, and said, okay, who is Marianne? I think if I asked 10 people, I'd get 20 answers. But he did write this song, I got to think, when he's in his mid to late 20s, which is the sexual prime for men. So he's not being bashful about it at all. Hot-blooded mountain love.
Yeah, it's Lightfoot's one of those performers. He's very charismatic, and he's not shy to sing about that aspect of his life, and he sings with conviction. And the lyrics that he puts into the songs, he's very transparent. Yeah, this is just showing I'm a sexual human being. He's one of these entertainers that women love, but men love him as well, because just got those two aspects to him. It's a great line. And yeah, he's not sugarcoating it there, that's for sure.
I mean, there are other times when he is kind of putting a little bit of a scrim in front of what's going on. I mean, you don't really know in black and white what's going on Affair on 8th Avenue. Whereas for Approaching Lavender, I mean, he's talking about take your clothes off and give your love to me.
I know.
So it's nice to see that that's still in his, I guess I'll call it his romantic period.
Yeah, exactly.
All is well as I swing up to the border bent for hell. And I got to think this is Lightfoot heading from the States into Canada because he's going up to the border. Why is he bent for hell? Is this a different part of the journey where he's thinking, okay, now I'm getting close and I really want to speed things up? Where is that coming from?
Well, I could be off base here, but I found a reference. It could be referencing a highway in Saskatchewan. It's Highway 35. And I've seen a couple of references referring it to the highway from hell. And I can't find any elaboration how it got that name or where the origin came from, but there is mentions about that highway was notorious for flooding, poor road conditions, especially back in the 60s. And maybe another possible explanation was there was a number of serious accidents on that highway. So I was thinking if that is the highway from hell, then he could be referencing a crossing from the US into Canada. I think it's the Fortuna Onger border crossing between North Dakota and Saskatchewan, which is where Highway 35 in Saskatchewan joins up with, I guess, the US interstates. So I don't know if I'm off base there, but that would kind of make some sort of sense if he's swinging up the border into the States and Canada, bent for hell. So he's bent for Highway 35 in Saskatchewan, which goes up to the Trans-Canada, which goes up to Calgary. So maybe, who knows?
Well, I mean, we hear about the highway to hell. I don't think that that particular stretch of road is what Bon Scott was talking about in the AC/DC song. Yes. But, you know, it's fun to think about. Okay. And the service station man agreed I didn't look too well. Okay, so obviously he has to stop for petrol. But if you've ever traveled long distances by car, let alone motorcycle, yeah, you're not going to look too well.
No.
If he's on a motorcycle, I mean, he's got bugs in his teeth and he's got, even if he's wearing a helmet, his hair is going to be all greased up and he's going to look like death on toast.
You'd think when he finally gets there, Marianne might kind of take one look at him and say, you know, wait a minute.
Well, or get in the shower, you know, if you want to have any fun tonight.
Well, especially if he's got his bedroll on his back. So maybe he's not even staying in motels or hotels. Maybe he's just finding some place to roll out the bedroll and sleep. So, yeah. So he wouldn't look too well at all.
No, and because he probably wouldn't be sleeping because it'd be so cold,
too.
You know.
Yeah,
just, unless he's just bumming a place to stay, or he's staying at a hostel or something. He left that out. The losers that I left behind, I'll think about some other time. Who are the losers? Do you have any concept about that?
I don't know if it's anybody specific, or maybe he's just saying, well, those people back home, they're living okay lives, they're playing it safe. Like going back to today is just friends. So you know, they're living their safe lives and they're not taking the risk to really go out and what they want. So maybe he's kind of referring to those people, losers, who are not willing to take the risk and go after what they really want.
Relative losers.
Yeah.
As opposed to him, because he's portraying himself in so many words as being, you know, bold and fearless, and I'm going to go out by myself and I need no one, as opposed to the guy who, back in Aurelia, who went to school and then went to university and now is working as an accountant in Toronto or something, predictable kind of lifestyle. You know, if you're a musician, a professional musician, it's anything but predictable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Gordon did work for a bank very briefly. Maybe that would be a loser. I worked for a bank for 30 years, so maybe that's a loser.
Okay, well, you said it, Michael. I didn't. Okay, because you know more about finance than I do. For the border men were all my friends. They couldn't find a dime. Now, there's two things that came to mind with this. One is that when you're crossing the border from Canada into the States or the States into Canada, many times there will be a search for contraband.
Right.
And it may not be illegal stuff, but it may be, do you have any plants? Do you have any fresh fruit? You might have to pay a tariff on, kind of like going through customs.
Right.
But the other thing that I thought of, they couldn't find a dime. And the only thing I can think of, I don't think he's talking about a literal 10-cent coin. I think he's talking about a dime bag of wheat. And I don't know that Lightfoot was ever a pot smoker. I know he smoked cigarettes, but I don't think he was ever a pothead. And so, again, is this poetic license or was he just making a cultural reference there?
Yeah. Well, I really like your thoughts about the dime bag, because I was kind of stuck on the literal dimes. So I was kind of thinking, well, back then a phone call cost 10 cents. So maybe he wanted to phone somebody like, am I doing the right thing? But then I don't think that's it. So I really like the dime bag reference that I've seen an interview that he did, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember him specifically saying that alcohol was my choice back in the day.
Yeah.
But he said, from time to time, I did partake in other things, but they're totally legal now. So weed back then was illegal, but now in Canada for years, it's been legal.
Yeah.
So he didn't actually say weed, but it was pretty clear to me anyways. And if he is on a motorcycle driving across the country, it's a lot easier to have a bag of weed than to be carrying a 2-4 beer or something like that. So,
my goodness. Yeah. And I mean, why would they be searching, you know, for beer? I mean, if it was American beer, they might want him to pay a tax on it. I don't know how it worked back then, but there it is. I don't think of Lightfoot as ever being a druggie. Alcohol was his thing. But on the other hand, and granted, I grew up after this stage, but I've also been a young man in North America, you know, who didn't smoke weed, particularly in the 60s. So that probably fits in with the zeitgeist. And then we get towards the end. All is well. The foothills are coming into sight. Today is just a memory. The future is tonight. I can almost feel his heart racing a little bit more, you know, as he's getting closer. He sees the foothills. His lady is in the mountains, so he's got a little ways to go, but he's certainly much closer. Again, you don't know what the ending of the story is, but you do know what the ending of the story is going to be. I still think that this would make a fantastic closing credits for a movie.
It would be, yeah, for sure. I thought that the last line where he said, today is just a memory, the future is tonight, it's a really good counterpoint to the line in the first verse where he says, yesterday's a memory, today is just a friend, but now today is the memory and the future starts tonight. So I thought that's such a great counterpoint to the beginning of the song, like closing it that way. And it's kind of like, that's the good ending.
That's what we call closing the loop.
Yeah, that too.
So now we get into a little bit more about the specifics, the technicalities of the song. It did appear on Did She Mention My Name in 1968. It was not released as a single, which I kind of understand and kind of don't, because it's such a beautiful song. Maybe they didn't think it would sell, but they could have tried it as a single. The album wasn't a huge success. It went to top 21 in Canada, did not apparently chart in the States or the UK or Australia, New Zealand. But again, a beautiful song from an album that is an amazing album and gets overshadowed by some of his later work. And The musical part of it that really spoke to me, there's probably two. One I wrote down here in my notes, and the other I just thought of this morning. The strings make it especially cinematic. In the same way that the string arrangement in Canadian Railroad Trilogy did, which I think was done by John Simon, I'm not positive, Approaching Lavender, which was done by Randy Newman. The other part of the instrumental that I really liked was the trumpets towards the end, because it gave this idea of the West. A lot of Westerns, you know, you have this dun-da-da-da.
Yes.
You know, that kind of feel to it. And it made me feel a little bit like, again, it's cinematic. This is him heading west. And I dare say that Alberta and British Columbia have their own sort of Western history, the same way we see in Hollywood movies and the way I do my other podcast called Writing the West. So I liked that. What was the musical aspect that spoke to you the most, Michael?
Well, there was a couple of things when you mentioned your orchestration too, like, and there's an interesting piece on the original album cover where Gordon Lightfoot writes something. So this was the first album he used orchestration on, and he writes on the album cover that he met John Simon in Philadelphia. John Simon came up to Toronto. They spoke for a bit. And Red Shea and John Stockfish came up with some nice licks on the songs. And then they hopped on a plane to New York and recorded the album. And he said, a week later, we were getting the tracks down and everything sounded right. When all of a sudden, Simon pulls out this violin section. And he says, I couldn't believe it at first. I mean, it sounded so fine altogether. So I just had to sit back and listen for a while. So I guess the orchestration was Simon's idea and Lightfoot liked it. And the strings kind of come in mid-song. And it's almost like it kind of picks up the protagonist's feelings or his spirits. And the strings, the horn section, so it's like it's trying to lift his spirits. And then the last verse, like you said, Mike, the horns come in, and it kind of reminded me of like when somebody arrives, the trumpets blare like, dur-dur-dur-dur-dur. And it's almost like at the very end of the song, I'm here, and the trumpets blare, and then the song ends. So yeah. I really like that piece. And the other thing I really liked were the instrumentation breaks, where he slows down the tempo, and he even stops before the last verse. And there's some really tasteful chord progressions up the neck of the guitar in that instrumental break. Tempo slows down, and it's as if the protagonist is kind of slowing down. Take a break, catch your breath. It's a long journey, collect your thoughts. And then he starts, all is well, and then the tempo picks back up again. So I really think that contributes to the song. You know, those are the two things I really like about this song.
I hadn't thought about it in terms of the passage of time, but he may be portraying when he has those slowdowns, you got to think that this journey has taken place over the space of a couple days. So maybe here's one chapter, it's slowing down, and the unwritten message is, as the sun comes up, we join our hero on the second day of his journey. So kind of dividing it up without making it really distinctive. When you think of Canadian Railroad Trilogy, these are very different songs in terms of feel and tempo and those kinds of things. Okay, this doesn't have the same kind of sweet feel to it, S-U-I-T-E, but episodic, I think, would be the word that comes to mind for that. We'll be right back to our conversation with Michael Howitt about The Mountains and Mary Ann, but first, a word from a podcast partner or two. Hey, I just wanted to take a second to tell you about my latest podcast discovery. Fire Breathing Kittens is an actual play one-shot podcast that plays various tabletop role-playing games with a season-long plot. Because there's a beginning and an end to each week's story, you can start at any episode. Yeah, you won't miss a thing. Every week has a different combination of four from the same rotating cast of people. Join Fire Breathing Kittens as they solve detective mysteries, attempt comedic banter, and enjoy friendship. That's Fire Breathing Kittens podcast. Check it out.
Sanjo, look!
Yes, Zach? Wait, what's that thing you're holding up?
It's a time travel device. We can use it to go back to the past and watch movies.
But we already do that on our podcast, Oldie But a Goodie.
No. On previous episodes, we were pretending to time travel. Now we can do it for real.
Cool, so we can really go back to, like, the 80s or the 90s?
No, Sando, you're thinking too little. I mean, we could go really far back. Like, we traveled back over 100 years into the past.
Aw, but Zach, that's so far in the past. Those movies would be old.
Yeah, but, well, a show is called Oldie But a Goodie, so we should probably do old movies.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's right, folks. This year on Oldie But a Goodie, we're going back further than ever before.
Wait, who are you talking to?
We're starting in 1920s, doing one movie from that year, and then moving up to 1921. And we're continuing that until the year 1969.
Nice.
Join our time-traveling journey through cinema by subscribing now to Oldie But a Goodie, out wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Now, you said a little earlier that this was very stripped down, I mean, in terms of the personnel. We don't know who played the instruments on the orchestration. We will never know. Right. We know that John Simon rounded up some people from the local orchestra and away they went. But right. We do know that Gordon, Red, and John, it was the original core of Lightfoot's right. sound. And that's probably why I enjoy it so much. Which is not to take anything away from Terry Clements. It's not to take anything away from Pee-wee. It's not to take anything away from Rick Haynes. It's just that this is the original in its purest form. When right. Lightfoot was working after he stopped being a solo, when he wanted to form his own band. And it really works. Something very interesting is that he only played this song 3 times in concert. And personally, I think it's because if you took away the strings and it was just a 3-piece thing, either John or Rick, either Terry or Red, it would still have a very different feel. It would be beautiful. It yeah. would still be a great song, but it wouldn't be as mm-hmm. cinematic. And I don't think it would be as compelling without that. So yeah. you take out the strings and it is not the same. Doesn't make it better or worse. It's just not the same. He played it the very first time was in Elmira, Ontario. And I hope you know where Elmira, Ontario is, because I certainly don't.
You actually had a past guest that lived near Elmira. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but I think he lived near there one time. So I've been there. It's a nice, beautiful hamlet type. Well, it's not a small hamlet. It's fairly big, but beautiful spot.
Well, it's big enough to have a high school. And, yeah, you know, which sure. means that there are enough people living around it. It's the nature of public education is neighborhood schools. And then right. 16, 17 months later, he played it for the last time in Charlottetown on Prince Edward Island at a venue that yeah. has been lost to history, as far as I know. I mean, when I looked on setlist.fm, they said unknown venue. And I've okay. certainly never been on Prince Edward Island, let alone Charlottetown. And if you have, and there's a venue there that he could play at, I'd love to know about it, but I don't know where it was.
Yeah, no, I have. It's a beautiful island. It's yeah, Anne of Green Gables, and it's yeah. a beautiful spot. Charlottetown's the birth of Canada was founded in Charlottetown. Like, I'm not a history major, but I think I'm right there. So it's a beautiful spot. A lot of history there. So yeah, I guess wherever he played, it's not there anymore, or who knows? I'm surprised he hasn't played it more, because I've seen him probably more than a dozen times in concert. Never heard him play this song. But that special I mentioned, Wherefore and Why, where it was just Lightfoot, John Stockfish, and Red Shade playing, it actually was quite good. Lightfoot is, I think he's such an underrated guitar player. Like him playing 12-string, I remember in the Lightfoot documentary, For Me In My Mind, Randy Bachman of Bachman Turner Overdrive and Guess Who, said he was such a great guitar player. He was such a great rhythm player that he didn't need drums back then, because the way he strummed the guitar, just, you know, the rhythm is right there. So they actually sound quite good, just the three of them. I agree. You won't hear that cinematic type thought to the song, but it stands on its own pretty well, just the three of them.
I would have liked to have heard just the three of them playing yeah. this song. And maybe I need to see if I can find that TV yes. special that you talked about.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah.
That being said, though, I mean, I still am going to always think of this song, I think, as one of those that should have been in a movie and never ended up being. And if maybe someday they will do a movie where they have somebody sort of riding off into the sunset
yeah.
and they have this, I mean, a boy can dream, right?
Yeah.
So the song has been covered by three artists that I could find. George Hamilton IV, who has done a bunch of different Lightfoot songs. Our good buddy John McLaughlin, who's been on the show many times and has entire records full of covers of Lightfoot. And Kenny Rankin. And Kenny Rankin is probably the most well-known. Have you heard any of the covers, and what are your thoughts on them if you have?
I wasn't able to find Kenny Rankin's cover. I did see he did cover it, and he also covered Pussy Willow's Cattails from the same album of Gordon's, but I couldn't find it anywhere. But I did listen to George Hamilton IV's cover, and then I thought it was a nice country take on it. So definitely preferred Gordon's. And actually, I preferred John McLaughlin's version over all the others. I think it was more true to Gordon's version. There was a hint of bluegrass in there, so I really liked that. I also found another cover by Noel Harrison, who's the son of Rex Harrison.
Oh, Windmills of Your Mind and all that.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Did that appear on a record of any kind? Because I didn't find that in my research.
Yes, it was on a 2003 compilation album called Life is a Dream. So he must have recorded it back in the late 60s, I would assume, when the song first came out. And I guess it just lingered, and then all of a sudden they put this compilation album together. Is on it, so I did listen to that. It's just an acoustic guitar, a double bass, and him. So it's kind of light and lilting and laid back. So it's a little bit too laid back for me, because I didn't feel the Hot Blooded Mountain Love at all in that cover. But
Noel Harrison was very talented. I just don't think of him as doing this kind of thing. I mean, I think of his stuff as being more ethereal. But that's as may be. Is there anybody that you would like to hear cover this that hasn't? Or is this one that, you know, let's just take the three or four covers that are there and not have anybody else touch it?
This is a Canadian band. They're not really well known in the States. They're called the Tragically Hip. They're not with us anymore because Gordon Downie, the lead singer, passed away. So they did a really good cover of Black Day in July. So they're very much a Canadian band. They talk about Canada a lot. So I can definitely hear them doing this song with a bit of an edge to it, so they would really bring the Hot Blooded Mountain Love to light. So I can hear them doing it. And then I thought about the Guess Who, like Burton Cummings, the lead singer, and Randy Bachman. They had a hit called Running Back to Saskatoon. So when I think of Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, and both big Gordon Lightfoot fans, and actually Burton Cummings is going to be performing at a celebration concert at Massey Hall in May. Burton Cummings is going to be there. Meredith Moon, Gordon's daughter, is going to be playing. Who else? Sylvia Tyson is going to be playing, good friend of Gordon's. Tom Cochran, Life is a Highway. Yeah, the Good Brothers, who played on at least one of Gordon's albums.
Summer Side of Life, I think.
Yeah. And Blue Rodeo is a Canadian band, maybe not well known in the States. So I can hear Burton Cummings doing a song, or the Guess Who. Because they're from Winnipeg, but they sing about the prairies. So yeah, I could hear that.
Yeah, you're far more familiar with the Canadian music scene than I am, but there was only one artist that I thought might have been able to take a swipe at this, and that would have been John Denver, who in the beginning of his career did do covers of different songs and did respectable versions of them. But towards the end of his career, well, probably the midpoint, and then towards the end of his career before we lost him in 1997, he was writing his own stuff. But this is in that sort of category, that genre of romance as seen through the eyes of nature, or with elements of nature put in. Yeah. And so I would have liked to have heard that. Other than that, nobody jumped out at me, you know, at least on this side of the border.
Yeah, I didn't think of John Denver, but yeah, he would do a really good job with this song. It very much would mesh with other songs he'd done. So yeah, that would be good.
So as we're kind of winding down here, we've talked quite a bit about the song, and it's a song that has made me fall in love with my image of the prairies of Canada. And as I said at the top of the show, we should probably address the elephant in the room, and that is what you were doing, where you were, and what your reaction was when you found out that Gordon had died, because that was about 9 months ago. And so coming up on the 1 year anniversary, and after we've hit the 1 year anniversary, I'm not going to ask my guests that anymore, but you and I haven't talked for a little bit. So I'm wondering, what was your experience of getting the news that Gordon had passed away?
Well, I still remember when he postponed his tour, there was some talk. And then when he actually canceled the tour, a lot of the local television stations here, they would air montages of Gordon's career, and like it was almost like he passed away. And I, when I seen that, I thought, well, he's canceled his tour, but he hasn't passed away yet, so he'll get better and he'll be on the road again. And so I don't know if people higher up in the media here knew more about what was going on, but I kind of didn't believe it. I thought he'll be back touring. But when I heard it, well, my wife and I were watching TV, and we get news alerts from a local paper here on our phone. So my wife turns to me and got an email alert from the Toronto Star, Gord Lightfoot just passed. So my heart just sank. Like I couldn't think for the rest of the night. And I usually play, I'll pick up the guitar every night and play for half an hour or whatever. And I usually play a lot of Gord Lightfoot stuff. And I couldn't bring myself to play for a good month or so. It seemed like something had been taken away from all of our lives. I guess as time goes by, you realize, well, we need to celebrate his contribution for what it's worth. So I think it's like yourself. I really, speaking for all us Lightfoot fans, we really appreciate all you do to keep his music alive and doing this. So, you know, I think I speak for a lot of people who are so appreciative of what you do. And we all play our part to keep his music alive. And his band is now touring in Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
They have a singer that's singing with them, and they want to keep the music alive too. So that's great. Yeah, it was such a shock at first. I felt definitely an emptiness inside, and like, I don't usually get that way over celebrities. It's just family members, but he really felt like family members. So I guess time heals wounds. So, but I'm back to playing his music again, which is fun again. So,
you know, that is probably the most meaningful thing about him, is that the man is not with us, but his music is going to go on because it always has. Right. And I think that grandson that was born to you just a few days ago, when he gets to be our age, and I think you and I have been around long enough to be considered old timers at this point, I guess. I think your grandchildren will still be playing his music and listening to his music and talking about his music when their kids have no idea who Lightfoot was. And I think the fact that his music is going to last that long probably says as much about the man and the contribution he's made to our lives as yes. as anything else would.
Yeah, exactly. Just as an aside, I go up to the dock at Christian Island usually once a month or so.
You just came back from there, didn't you?
Yeah, so I'm retired from banking, but I drive vehicles now that I'm retired, is just to pass the time type thing. So we deliver vehicles to Christian Island. So we're up there. And I didn't know when I heard the song, but Christian Island is First Nation, like it's the Beausoleil First Nations. And whenever I go up there, I always say, you know, Christian Island, I'm a huge Gord Lightfoot fan. And they all say, no matter what age, you know, even people that are 20 years old, yeah, we know Gordon Lightfoot. My uncle used to sit and have beers with him and sing and play the guitar together. So everybody on Christian Island, I don't know how many people live there, I'm guessing 300 or so, and a lot of them live on the mainland. They all know Gordon Lightfoot, so that's how the music stays alive. Everybody in Canada that's picked up a guitar and tries to play songs all know Gordon Lightfoot, so that's how the music lives on.
That's fantastic. And it's, again, a sign that the music goes on, and that's part of the folk tradition. And
yeah.
It's such a joy to be able to talk about somebody who, in the eyes of the world, probably never got all of the credit that he deserved, but in the eyes and the hearts of his fans, is still very much alive and well. And that's a good way for us to stop here before we start crying, because I know that he meant a lot to us. Michael, our experiences and our conversations just get better all the time. And so yes. I wanted to thank you for, again, taking the time tonight, and want to have you on the show again real soon, if not this season, then in season 4.
That'd be great. I have so much fun doing these. I listen to every one of the podcasts. I haven't seen the last one yet. I think it was Tattoo, but when I do these road trips up to Christian Island, that's when I listen to the podcast. So I really enjoy them. I learn a lot about Gordon's songs through the guests you have and your insights, because a lot of his lyrics, you think, what is he saying here? And then to hear other people's take on it, it's really enlightening. So I really enjoy these so much, and it's an honor to be here. I thank you so much, Mike.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. Our website is www.lightfootpodcast.com. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much, and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com. Well, our next episode will feature my guest, Derek Buckley, and he and I will be discussing Gordon's song, Heaven Help the Devil, from the Shadows album. And that episode will be coming out in either late February or early March of 2024. Until then, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.